Okay, gents. So let me share my screen so we can get a good look at this. And Andrew, if there's you're in the background, mate. So if there's any questions pop in that I can't see because I'll be on the presentation, can you give me unmute yourself and give me a shout if there's any questions as we go through, please?
Yeah, I got you.
Legend, man. Thank you. And boys, like if there are any questions as we go through, I'd rather you just like pop it in the chat. Andrew can shout it out. Or if you just want to mute yourself and ask that question, that's totally fine too. Okay. Even the guys that haven't got their videos open right now. That's all good. So client transformation of Mr. Dave Thornhill. So this one's close to my heart because we went through a lot through this one. And to say he's a legend of a man isn't doing enough justice. He's an exceptional man. Steps up to the plate on every opportunity, always communicates. And I think as a coach, like I'll probably speak for all the coaches, communication is key for us because we're just as invested in you are to get your results as well, right? We want everybody to do well as a team. And the more we communicate together, the better I find the results are. And Dave just reaches out all the time. We're constantly in communication. Let me just do that. And just to give you a bit of a background on him. He's a 48-year-old male. He's got a wife and two young kids. His wife's got a successful job, I believe, at Google. And he's also got his own advertising agency as well. So you can imagine how busy they are as a family. He came in at 175 pounds and about 28% body fat with low back pain and shoulder pain as well. So he would always break down at the low back. And just to give you an insight into his day, he would obviously take care of his kids. There's a lot of energy need to be put towards his two children. So they share that obviously as a husband and wife. And once the kids go to bed, then Dave gets to go train in the gym. So he's typically training like later in the day. We have discussed potentially getting to bed earlier and then getting up earlier to do that. But the way his day runs, he's in the rhythm of doing it the way he's doing it. So I haven't tried to change that too much just yet because the results, as you'll see shortly, will be going in the right direction. So I'm a big fan of if it's not broke, don't fix it. I try and maneuver through all the other obstacles first before we need to make a change on that. And he's recovering pretty well so far. So he's done good. But his goals when he came in, he wanted to increase 20 pounds of lean mass and increase his energy levels. So his energy levels were pretty much dire. Right. So he would struggle in the evenings. He would sort of snack throughout the day, meal prep for his kids and so on, but then eat on snacks that weren't very good in terms of driving energy levels up. You could imagine the way I would try and describe it is overfed and undernourished. So you were eating a lot of calories without too much nutritional value to those. So obviously, a lot of processed foods. Driving blood sugar swings, inflammation, and so on. So that was the outset that we came in with, right? And this is Dave at the start point. So at this point here, he's about 28, potentially 30% body fat. I'll go with 28 just to give him the benefit of the doubt. But he's 175 pounds here. So typical, what we would call skinny fat, right? So not a lot of muscle underneath, and he wants to put on lean mass. And as a guy growing up, this is actually one of Ben's close university friends. And as he was, sorry, I'm just going to let Dale in. As he was in university, his whole thing, he wanted to build muscle and he just found it very, very tough to do so. So that's obviously why he wanted to come in and add 20 pounds of muscle or lean mass. So where we had to start, I did a little presentation the other week with the six pillars mastery. So again, those six pillars are skill, sleep, and stress, the three S's first. Then we need to manage inflammation and insulin sensitivity, digestive health, and aerobic fitness. Okay, so skill would be around resistance strength training initially. So acquiring skill at lifts. So for somebody that has low back pain and shoulder pain, we need to make sure that there's skill acquisition through the front end of the programming for him to rule out any injury. We don't want any injuries. He can't put on muscle mass if he's going to get injured, and he's not going to drop as much body fat as we want if he's injured, right? So the first thing is we want to improve skill at every opportunity. Sleep is a big drive for sure, but We didn't cross that off. We did put things in to help improve sleep quality rather than quantity, because we knew the quantity wasn't going to be there. We had to maximize the quantity that he did have and improve the quality of it. So that's something we put in place. And then to improve stress, again, we couldn't take all of the stress away for him. But as we start to build fitness and improve skill and in resistance training and so on, we build up his functional capacity to handle stress. So as stress started coming on, and we'll go through the way his mindset works right now, he's able to manage stress as it unloads on him way better. And he shows up a different person totally. And for me, this is possibly the best part of the transformation without the physique development, like all lean mass aside, all body fat dropping aside. What I see is a different man, like the way he can show up for his family. Like that for me is better than any transformation. So we'll delve into that as we go. But as we'll go in through this slide presentation now, you'll see at this point inflammation, insulin sensitivity. We could probably tie in metabolic flexibility with these two. That was the biggest drive that we had to push. And we're going to go into the context of that in a second. So you'll see metabolic flexibility, the main thing that we had to uncover first. We tackled that with through nutrition and managing inflammation, but we noticed that he had a low body fat utilization process. So it was very slow progress initially. So to drop body fat was very, very slow, and he couldn't tap into fat and use that as energy, right? So it was very, very tough to begin with. So we had to start with some supplementation and testing. So we did a specific test. We did a few weeks. He did drop some body fat in the first 6 to 8 weeks, but it was, like I said, very, very slow. So I was like, this isn't, and this guy was like adherent to everything, 100% on the meal plan. He would track everything for me. He didn't miss a, he didn't miss, didn't skip a beat at all. So we then proceeded. I got Greg to do an organic acid test. Okay, so on the organic acid test, what it can uncover is certain bottlenecks in biochemistry of the cells themselves, right? So it's starting to test at a cellular level what is going on. And I'm just gonna stop share the screen so I can see a few of your faces, and we can go into some questions here in a second. But let me see. Two's still on. So yeah, so typically what we found is this organic acid test within the cell, and the way you guys ideally want to create energy, we need oxygen coming into the system for sure. So if you're not breathing effectively and you haven't got a good base of aerobic fitness, there's going to be less oxygen coming into the system, which when we start to make energy and create ATP, which is the energy currency, that last step to create ATP is reliant on oxygen. So if there's no oxygen coming in, that's going to be a bottleneck, and everything starts to get backed up because you basically start to push things called electrons, and there's basically a push towards this end state. And that last end state is oxygen that attaches as a molecule, and then bang, you'll make ATP. But we noticed that he can get oxygen in. But what we found on his organic acid test, we found that he was very, very high in something called lactate. So you guys are probably familiar with lactate or lactic acid, where you feel the burn when you're doing either lots of reps or doing lots of cardiovascular work. Am I right, Thompson? Thompson's going to be feeling that in shortly, because he's got some lactate-based training in his training program right now. But basically what happens, you won't necessarily feel this burn of lactate. And typically where lactate builds, as you push, let's say, for example, you eat some carbohydrates, everything gets broken down, and then it gets converted into different molecules along the way and broken down and broken down and broken down. And before it enters the cell, it gets broken down to other little particles to go into the mitochondria and then be shuttled over for oxygen to attach to it. If there's no space for, or it cannot get into the cell, the body transmits it somewhere else and creates lactate out of it. So just off that test alone, we could see high lactate, which means we know this glucose molecule, the carbohydrates he's eating, isn't getting into the cell. So that poses the question, well, why isn't it getting to the cell? Well, what did we say when he first came into the program? He was underfed and he was overfed and under nutritious food, right? He wasn't feeding himself the quality food. So he's deficient in vitamins and minerals. Now, if that's the case and he's not getting fat into the cell, then we've got an issue with lactate, because if lactate's high, the body isn't going to utilize fatty acids because the body wants carbohydrates. It wants glucose to get in the cell. We can see that because lactate's too high. So we had to start with supplementation. One sec. What is the procedure, steps, costing of the organic acid test? We can get Sarah to let you know that, Des, for sure. I'm not sure the prices, to be honest, mate. Greg and Sarah deal with all that stuff. I just say, my man needs a test, and they get it in. And I just look at the test with Greg, and we plan the steps from there. But Sarah can definitely contact you and know that. And Greg will get us the answers for that for sure. I was hoping Greg was going to be on today, but he couldn't make it, unfortunately.
Thanks.
But yeah, with the lactate, what we found was if you're struggling to get that glucose molecule into the cell, typically you have an enzyme called pyruvate dehydrogenase. So basically PDH. That's the way you remember it, PDH. And that's an enzyme structure. And the nutrients you need for that enzyme structure to function well are B vitamins, alpha lipoic acid. Okay. So those are the two main things that you'd want to really allow that to function. So we started supplementing with those things. The other end of the spectrum, if his body wants to use glucose and he's building up lactate, well, the one thing I can do to stop that glucose coming in is bring him down into a lower carbohydrate diet. So I stop the carbs coming in, I build up the PDH enzyme. So when we do introduce them, you can shuttle them in effectively. So essentially now, even though he's already in a deficit, he wasn't a pure calorie deficit. We did see some body fat loss, but it was very slow. Now, all we did was change the distribution of macros. And after 24 hours of taking his carbs away, I'm going to pose this question to you. What do you think he felt like after I took his carbs away? If I took your carbs away, Des, what would you feel like?
Very sluggish.
Sluggish, right? Yeah. Tired in the beginning, Andrew G, yeah, for sure. Tired in the beginning. Now, one signal is if you're metabolically inflexible and I take your carbs away, if you're flexible, you should notice a difference. You should still have the same amount of energy. Food shouldn't give you energy or drop your energy. It should be identical. So you should have the ability to flip in and out of fats or carbs. So after 24 hours, he's in a group. So any client that does testing with myself, I put them in a group with myself and Greg, and we always communicate. Let us know how you're feeling. Let us know the symptoms. Let us know that, like, I want, like I said, constant communication. Within 24 hours, he messaged the group. No, this word for word. He said, "I feel like I shouldn't even be driving a car. I feel horrendous." And I was like, "We're on the right track. Like, this guy needs to drop these carbs, and we need to get him fat adapted as fast as possible." So I was like, Greg was like, "We've got to give him some carbs." Greg really worried. I was like, "Nope, he needs to stick it. We need to get on with it and get it done." So I was like, "Dave, don't drive the car. Step number one. Step number two, give me another 48 hours to potentially 5 days. And I promise you, you're going to start to feel better, but don't drive the car. Just stick to the diet. I promise you're going to be good." 2 days later, he's like, "My energy's coming up. I'm feeling okay. No problem at all." 1 week later, he was like, "I don't know what you've done to me, but my energy is through the roof. I haven't felt like this in 10 years." So fast out of the gates, we started to change his physiology pretty fast. So we had the enzymes coming in and the other supplements we used to allow fat, and there's other training protocols we use as well, which I'll go into, but to allow fat to get into the cell, we gave him carnitine and vitamin C. So when you start to understand how fat gets into the cell itself, you need carnitine to drive that in, right? So the analogy I try and use, did anybody, now I might be showing my age here, I'm older than probably some of you here, for sure, Des, for sure, I think. But when I was younger, I used to sneak into nightclubs, right? I'm not sure if anybody else snuck into nightclubs when they were underage. Hold your hands up, everybody. Des, for sure. A gangster over there. Yeah. So I'm not alone. That's good. So when I was 15, 16, I would be able to sneak in nightclubs. But how would I sneak in there? I had all the friends that could get me in. right? So the older friends knew the bouncers, like, yeah, this guy's with me, so I was able to get in, but I'd queue up with my other younger friends, right? So my friend came to the front, chat to the bouncers, my man's with me, he gets me in. He's carnitine. He's L-carnitine. So he gets me in. Training bags, yeah, bags of vitamin C. Andrew, vitamin C's coming into play now. So as I get into the club, he hands me off to his friend. His friend takes me to the bar, right? He's vitamin C. So vitamin C takes me and he frees up carnitine to go get my other friend. So one at a time, he's bringing us in. That's basically how carnitine and vitamin C work to keep cycling and bringing fatty acids into the cells. That's all they do. Right. So if you're deficient in carnitine, I'm not saying you won't get them in, but it'll be sluggish to get them in. It'll be very slow rate. So as soon as we uptick that, we're able to get fat into the cell better. We bring carbohydrates down. So now the body's only option is to start shuttling fat in for energy. Does that make sense? So it was a bit of a nightmare first. He couldn't drive a car for a few days because he felt like he had a few drinks, couldn't concentrate effectively. But that's basically how we started, right? So, does anybody have any questions so far? Everybody good? Fantastic. So, high lactate, he had very low energy. We started with B vitamins. Sorry, I missed out magnesium. Magnesium, alpha lipoic acid to improve the PDH enzyme. So the other reason we gave magnesium was because in the first step of breaking down glucose, the first step is reliant on magnesium. So if you're magnesium deficient, you're going to struggle to break down glucose. Can your body still do it? Yes. But if you're deficient, it's going to do it at a slow rate. So again, you're going to get backed up. It's like going into the way I see like the glucose pathway, if you're eating carbohydrates or fuel through glucose and you're getting backed up, it's like a traffic circle. All these cars come into a traffic circle, and you've only got one lane to go through. Whereas ideally, we want like five lanes for everybody to start shuttling through. So if we're deficient in nutrients, like the PDH enzyme needs all of these nutrients here. If you're deficient in these, that's like going from five lanes down to one. And all you're going to do is start to get backed up and backed up. And if you get backed up, we're producing lactate. Make sense? And then we've got the old nightclub, carnitine and vitamin C. Alley-oop, getting all the fat cells, all the fat into the cell. So that's where we started. But we still kept them in a deficit, for sure. Now, from February 5th to May 12th, we kept low carb. We kept a calorie deficit. We had him around this, between 1900 and 2000. And this was his carb intake, 65 grams. It was very low, like 85 grams of fat, but we gave him more protein. Obviously, there's going to be hunger going on and so on, but the amount of protein that we had him on, he was like, this is no problem. I've got no hunger. And then obviously, as he started to get fat adapted, his energy levels started to come up even more, and he felt good. So that's from February to May. So February, March, April, halfway. So 3.5 months, halfway through May. Now, remember, if we're taking away carbohydrates, there's no way I could, if I wanted to be a pain in his ass, there's no way I could have started him off on Andrew's program that Fudge started you on, Andrew. Like, if I was going to give him 15 to 20 reps with 4-0-1-0 tempo, this guy would have lasted a week and punched me in the face. Like, there's just no way he's going to continue on with it. He could have crashed and burned because there's no carbs coming in, right? You're driving a very glycolytic style training session at that point. So there's no way I can give him high reps, but I can give him low reps. Right? So low reps means less glucose needs to be used. So in his strength training, we did 3 times per week full body. And we'll go into other reasons why in a second. But low reps, 5 to 8 rep ranges around those doesn't require glucose. And on his off days, we only use aerobic fitness, zone two, that was it. And we just build up the density of the workout for him. So low rep training to start, aerobic fitness, done. That was it for 3.5 months. Any questions on that first phase?
Gavin, I've got a question. What do his energy levels go like during the workout? As because I'm assuming it takes longer for the fat to access the fat, like to break down the carbon chain. So like how, like he's not going to get that sudden burst energy through carbohydrates. So will his energy kind of take a bit of time to release during his workouts, or was he like energetic straight from the start of the workout, if that makes sense?
He was fine from the workouts because now we're not driving up glucose need in that sense because we're not using high repetitions. So remember, in that point, if he can't get fat, if he can't get carbohydrates into the cells, technically his muscle glycogen is ready to go. Like he still has muscle glycogen there. He's probably got liver glycogen to go too. So in the session, he can still output. But what you'll typically find is once you start to deplete, and remember he's also got glucose in his blood as well, with obviously there's lactate accumulation, so there's still glucose in the blood. So as he starts to deplete muscular glycogen from training, so the contraction goes up, the glucose gets used in the muscle. Now we've got that situation where you can drive glucose from the blood into the muscle without insulin. So it's a non-insulin mediated pathway. So imagine you've got a transient thing now where, like, imagine osmosis where you take up one gradient in the muscle. Now there's a bit of space, so the body goes, I can fill it, takes it out of the bloodstream and fills that muscle glycogen back up. Because essentially what the body, the way I try and like think of it very simply, if the body senses that there's no glucose coming in nutritionally, it's going to try and hold on to as much lean mass as possible. So it's going to be very selfish and keep hold of that muscle glycogen. So that's another reason why I kept in low reps. That's another reason why I kept in with higher frequency full body through the week. Because if we think about, I want to keep muscle mass. What was his main goal? I want to add lean mass. So if I'd give him high reps, high reps, high reps all the time on a low carbohydrate diet, essentially he's going to use all of his muscular glycogen for sure. He's going to feel flat. He's not going to look as full. And then as we start to go, his energy is going to drop even more. He's going to crash. He's going to have a lot of fatigue coming in. So with three full body
Does
sessions.
that, sorry, go.
Go
Does that crash happen from just depleting the glycogen? Then he's got to access his fat stores, and it takes a bit of time to access his fat stores, and then that's where the transfer over is, and you become tired because of that.
Yeah, exactly. Initially, it takes a little bit of time. But as you finish that session, typically what you want to be doing as your heart rate comes down, your body should be able to tap into it like that. So your energy should still continue to be nice and easy. That makes sense?
Yeah, thanks for
Once
that.
we get that flexibility out of the session, obviously in the session, you're using muscular glycogen for sure. You probably won't use a lot of fat through the session. But then once the session's finished, his heart rate drops a little bit. That's when your body's using fatty acids. Yeah. Andrew, you got your hand up, mate?
Yeah, I was going to ask, are there general dosage recommendations for ALA and carnitine, or is that something that you think everyone benefits from, or do you need to kind of test it and see?
So the only reason we use carnitine, because we saw the deficiency with the fat getting into the cell from the organic acid test, and obviously we had a lot of lactate buildup. So our main lookout there was like, well, there's a lactate buildup here, so PDH isn't working to cycle that into the cell and create acetyl-CoA, two acetyl-CoA enzymes, so cofactors. So we just couldn't get that in. So that was our main reason for driving up B vitamin. So it's just a normal B complex that we use, just like one or two caps a day. Carnitine, I think it was around 2 grams for him. And magnesium, I typically go, I like around 10 milligrams per kilo. So if you're a 100 kilo male, then I would probably do 1 gram a day. Myself, I'll do anywhere from 600 milligrams to 900 milligrams, depending on how much training I'm doing, how many carbohydrates I'm on, how stressed I am, things like that. So it can titrate up and down based off the part of life you're going through. So you have to remember, the more stressed you are, the more magnesium you're going to deplete. So there's a lot of physiology. When you go deep, yes, calorie deficits are the main key for sure, like overall overarching factor. But when we get at a deeper level, if you think the more stressed I am, and this could even go to a genetic level where if you look at your DNA, if you've got a SNP in Something like your COMT, something called COMT pathway. So catecholamine methyltransferase pathway in the methylation cycle. That's the part which helps you metabolize stress hormones. So if you're pummeling through that fast, and you've got a SNP where you get through it fast or even slow, you can deplete magnesium very, very fast. So you'd be taking a 300 milligrams of magnesium a day, you're eating carbs, you're training hard, you don't handle stress very well, and all of a sudden your magnesium's gone, right? So, and then you get in low fatigue and things like that. When you bring magnesium up, all of a sudden you're sleeping better and you're able to metabolize stress hormones at a better rate. You know, and that's just from supplementation of magnesium. So I'm not saying that's the be all and end all, but when you get at a deeper level, like these things can make a good difference, you know, even if it's a 1%. You stack 1%, and it's a game changer. We were just watching myself and my son, we were just watching the swimming in the Olympics, and there was a British guy in there, like lost. He came second by like point something of a second. It's like not even 1%. Like, that's crazy. So if you think, so this is why I say, like, if you're stacking up 1% every day, 1% is the difference between seventh place and the gold medal at the Olympics. That's crazy. So I always err on the side of how many 1% can I build every day and every week, because they make a big difference. Where were we? Yeah, so zone two. For his aerobic fitness, and we just built up. So we made sure he didn't go into glycolytic pathways as he was doing zone two. So nasal breath work, as he was doing his cardiovascular training, he couldn't get out of nasal breath work. And typically, it was around 130 beats per minute if you want to get to that degree of level. We didn't go too much above that. We just kept him there, built it from 25 minutes to 30, 35, 40, and build him up and up and up, and just improve the density of the workout. So that way, because he didn't shift his heart rate to high levels, his body's only using fatty acids at that point. So that's the training mechanism of the body only needs fats at this point. So the body starts getting used to using fat at that. We're forcing it to use it. Okay. Now, from May 13th to July 21st, this is when we started to see switches in the nutrition. So on May the 6th, you'll see on the next slide, May the 6th, we made a nutrition change. It was 1 week before the dates I just gave, but we kept them around the same calories. But I made a switch to 100. So I gave him another 40 grams of carbohydrates, and I dropped his fat a little bit. So if I drop his fat, he's going to start potentially tapping into that fat. Now I've upped the carbohydrates, so he can start to store out a little bit more muscular glycogen from, because obviously he's starting to use it up now, right? So I need to put stuff in. And the reason I did this is I can see photographs getting leaner and leaner every week. So if I'm seeing him getting leaner, his energy's still good. At some point, I want to test how well he functioned on more carbohydrates. Is he getting sluggish again? Right. So low energy, carbohydrates coming in, he can't get them into the cell. So that means he's having blood sugar swings. He can't get them. His blood sugar is going up. Then it's dropping because insulin's coming in and it's shifting it around places because he can't get into the cell. So highs, lows, he's going to get sluggish. So I only upped him 40 grams of carbs. Sweet, no problem. He's still dropping body fat every week because his deficit's still there. I know carbs are getting into the cell. I know he's using fats now because his energy outside of the gym is good. So now if I drop fat from the diet, where's he going to get the rest of the fat from? From his fat cells, because now he's using it. And now I can start adding more carbohydrates in to fuel the workouts and start pushing more muscular glycogen. Make sense? So that was sweet. And again, I've only changed his diet once here. Sometimes, like, we do expect like a change in the diet plan, like every week, every other week. Like, if I change this in week two, he'd have probably crashed and burnt, right? But if he's losing body fat and he's happy and his energy's good, don't change it. Like, in my aspect, please don't change. Like, keep doing the things that are working, and eventually you're gonna be able to eat what you want. Right, to a certain degree. We're not gonna eat all the time what we want, but we're having fun at the moment, let's say. So that was the change we made on 6th of May. And then we started to change to an upper-lower split. So we started getting heavier. We still kept him relatively low reps, but you can see the volume went up here on his main lifts. And we did like a, so these three were like a broad pyramid. So these three were warm-up sets, and these three were his top sets. So he's like max five, drop the weight, max seven, drop the weight, max nine. So it's three hard sets. And then after 4 weeks, we went down a little bit more. And after another 4 weeks, six, we built to a max six, and we backed off eight. But you'll notice the reps go down as it comes up. Right. So as the weeks go on and the 12 weeks goes on, his rep schemes were going down. And I'll explain a little bit more on that in a second. Again, zone two work. Like we're still pummeling fat off this off his body. There's no need to drive more glucose pathways at the moment. We don't need to deplete. We want to fill him because he wants to put on lean mass. Now, from July 22nd to the current day, he's now a 224 protein. He's up, actually, not to the current day. I'll tell a lie. I'll tell you his new his calories and macros in a second. But we increased carbs again from the previous one to 200, and we got his fats down to 70. But he's on around 2003 to 2004 at this point. And now we've shifted him to a push-pull legs. He's still doing four times a week, but every 3 weeks he'll hit the same workout twice. So in week one, he'll do push twice. Week two, he'll do pull twice. Week three, he'll do legs twice. And then he recycles back through again. So it'll be a 6 week phase. But if you notice now, we're doing 8, 6, 4. Then he does a top set of four, and then he backs off for a 12. So these two are the top sets. So what I'm trying to get him ready to do is like two really hard working sets. So you can see the volumes coming down and down and down, and the intensity is going up and up and up. So now skill acquisition's being acquired in the first 12 to 20 weeks. Now he's starting to get ready to perform. Why? Because his carbohydrates are coming up. Now he's utilizing it very well. So he tightened up his form. He knows how to execute. He's better at contractions, and he's physically able to do it from an energy standpoint, a hormonal standpoint, right? Now, this is his current, he's in a 5% surplus. He's on 275 grams of carbs, 2,600 calories a day. So we've gone from 60 grams of carbs up to 275. Still doing zone two. No need for in high intensity interval training yet. Nothing yet. And this is where he started. And this is him currently. So his goal, his overarching goal was to add 20 pounds of lean mass. And he's hit 12 in. From February until now. Till now, in about 5 months. So not too bad. He's done very, very well. But he's lost 18 pounds, gained 12 pounds of lean mass. Think that was the last slide. But based off that's not too bad of a transformation in that amount of time, considering that this guy started on 60 grams of carbohydrates. Within 5, 6 months, we've got him up to 275. And all we worked on was physiology, metabolic flexibility, and skill acquisition. That was it. But his energy's through the roof. So this is where I see the key. And this is what I said about this transformation. Although he looks great, he says the best shape he's ever been in since he was 20 years old. He's now 48. But 1 second, Stephen, I'll answer your question right now. The main thing you can do is handle stress more. Right. So with his family, with his kids, he's able to show up and support his kids more than what he's ever have been. His wife's got a very successful job, obviously, so is he. But when his wife goes away to work, he's able to step in and do what he needs to do. He feels more fulfilled because he can show up for his family and his wife on a different level. Like his energy's through the roof to do that. So when stress comes in, it's not like panic stations. He's like, I got it. Don't worry about it. We got it. Right, that's the difference in himself that I've seen for sure, and he's sort of openly spoken about too, which is for me better than six-pack abs, which he has right now, right? So that's one reason why I wanted to show you that transformation today, because I think you've heard Ben over the years say, and definitely over the past few months for sure, it's like six-pack's great, getting the physique is great, but it's the man you're becoming in the process of doing that. And that's the outcome that it had for him. Even though he looks fantastic, He's now able, it was his birthday 2 weeks ago. He was able to go out and eat free meals. I think it's been going a little bit too long. It's like 2 weeks ago now. He messaged me early. He said, I've been to a restaurant for my birthday. I'm like, hang on, that was 2 weeks ago. What's going on? So we had to have a little chat on that. But he's able to go out. We got free meal strategies. And he's got enough calories now to play with. He's got enough carbohydrates and fats to play with. It's simple for him to do. Right. And we've taught him how to manage all that over the few months, right? But that's all part of the process of it being sustainable. Like now he's in a point where it's super easy. At first, you might have to, like Dave did, you've got to really remove things back down, start from scratch and go, what do I need to do? Like, let's get the physiology right first. Let's get stress under control. Let's get training efficiency done. Let's get the physiology in the right place. Then bang, you can build and build and build. And it doesn't, if you think of the grand scheme of things, 6 months isn't a long time. Right, you can do that in 6 months. But we had to have commitments. We have to have 100% follow through. We say we're going to do it, we follow through and do it. Then you coach. So for me, for him, like I knew exactly when to make that change because I could see it on his performance tracker. So if I showed you, let me see if I can pull up his performance tracker just for ease. Escape out of this. So if I show you the performance tracker that he fills in. Now, for some of you, it might look a lot. You wouldn't have to fill in all of this stuff. Even if it was just your body weight every day, that tells us a lot. But obviously, the more data we can see as a coach, the more accurate we can be. But this is his from February. You can see the date. Filled it all in. Like I can see everything. So this is his current. Now he's actually building muscle. So you can see he went down to 150. 155, I think, was the lowest. And now we're starting to build back up. So, as I keep, and I will keep him as lean as he is right now, maybe a couple of percent more, but we'll get him back up to 170, roughly where he is right now. So, we'll add another 15 to 20 pounds on his frame at the same body fat percentage. So, that's our goal there. So, if you think about you wanted to add 20 pounds, if I kept him at the same body fat percentage at 170, that's a huge amount of lean mass increase. Huge. So that's our next target. So by Costa Rica, you better be in shape to come and get it. Before I take any questions, I want to answer. How is he measuring body fat percentage? I measure the I do the body fat percentage by eye. Who asked me that? Was it Stephen? Yeah, Stephen Mann. So I've been. I have a gym in the UK and we use InBody. I used to teach body caliper measurements to trainers all over the world. So I used to use a 12-site caliper measurement. So I used to use calipers, body fat pinch, and I would do thousands and thousands of measurements every year. It was incredible. I wouldn't even say how many thousands I've done teaching it to students across the world, like even just from the students, it's thousands. Let alone the clients. So once you start to play with this stuff and you look at people's body fat percentages over time, you're able to sit and go, you're this body fat percentage. Even if you're out by 1% or so, it's not going to really make a big difference, especially when you consider in my gym to stop us to save time, we were using calipers. Imagine I've got 250, 300 gym members and they all want body fat caliper testing. Which is part of the package. I'm like, I've got no time in the day to measure 300 people every week. It's crazy. So we got an InBody, which is way faster. But even the InBody is out by like 5% sometimes, depending on if the person's come into the gym correct procedure, like a little bit of water, specific amount of time beforehand, no food, like everything has to be identical when you test. Even DEXA's, I think, like DEXA's probably the best one you're going to get. For the price. And even that sometimes is out by a couple of percent. So to be honest, I like to go by body weight, eye, and progress photos. That's the way I found to be most consistent over the years. Like I was sat in Ben's, me and Ben were in Toronto, and one of our good friends came in and he was working with one of our coaches. And Ben sat across the table and he eyeballed him. And he's like, you're 21% body fat. And that afternoon, he was going for a DEXA. He had a DEXA. He came back later that night and he was 21.6% body fat. So we can eyeball it to a pretty good standard. But even if he was 22% body fat, like, doesn't matter, man. Like, you're going to be there and thereabouts anyway. It's not going to change too much of the protocol we're going to do. But that's typically how I run it, man. Because obviously people go, well, I'm 21.6 on this. I was 22 on that. Like, you're 0.4% out. Still got to lift the weights the next day. You still got to eat your carbs at that level. It's still going to happen anyway, right? Did you say that was over 6 month periods? Don't remember the dates from the slides. How long did you drop his carbs before raising them? So, Ross, let me do this, Ross, one sec. This is why I go back. So, 5th of Feb, he was on 65. And we kept him there for 13 weeks. And the reason I did that as well is because his energy was through the roof. He was actually starting to get reluctant to bring his carbs up. I had to talk him into it because he was like, no, everything's going well. I don't. I was like, man, we got to put some carbs up at a certain point because we're going to need performance to go up. You want to put mass on, you got to fill the muscle. But 13 weeks, then we went up to 100 grams of carbs. So week 14, we kept him there for 4 weeks. Then we went up to 200 grams of carbs. So you can see week by week, then we went to 220, and now we're up to 275 over 24 weeks. So yeah, initially 12 weeks on the low carb state to help me. And this is why I like data, right? So we can always look back, and there's a reason why I change things. And if when you get many clients, you have to make, I'm sure you guys know they're in that do your businesses or if you're coaches yourselves, like the more data you can reflect back to is like, shit, why did I make that change? Like, I did this, why did I do that? You will forget with how many clients you have or how many things you got going on in your business. Like, the more notes I can make, boom, I remember that. And then I can start to build and piece together case studies like this. So that's why I like collecting data. So I can show you, like, this is what works based off this person. But if we understand how physiology works, the level of stress you've got going on, how much you can train in a week, we can start to predict a lot of things that's going to happen. All we then do is analyze what worked. What do we need to change? Do we need to change? Go and do it next week. That's how it should work. Right. And then all we've got to do is manage mindset, make sure your families are happy and everybody's winning. Right, Thompson.
Yep.
So
Good
like
luck.
Thompson's going through right now, and this guy is busy. Like, last week was like, honestly, out of all my clients I've ever had, possibly one of the busiest clients I've ever spoken to. Like,
Without kids as well.
yeah, without kids, like, he was working until 2 a.m. and getting back up at 6. I'm like, right, okay. Like, am I going to ask Tom? Like, to be fair, he got and did his workouts in, but I'm like, Thompson, stick to, I'm not going to change your program to the next phase. Stick to this one. Drop this sets. Do this with your workout. I didn't try and pummel him with volume because he's so stressed with other stuff. He's going to be depleted and he's not going to have the reserves to recover from that if I keep beating the living daylights out of him, right? So that's where the communication comes in. His check-in was like, this next week's going to be hell. This is what I'm doing. This is how much sleep I've got. Right. Next week, do this. Right. That 1 week isn't going to be the biggest week that's going to get a massive amount of results. We can recover, step back a touch, and then we've got more energy to kick in when he needs to, you know? And lo and behold, he's practiced his new program and he's starting to get some cleavage on him now. He's building some pecs. Yes, Thompson. Good man. Boys, have we got any questions on any of the transformation we covered today or even any questions on stuff that you're going through right now? Everybody good? Andrew, any questions in the chat that I've missed?
I think you're good, man.
Think I'm good. Okay, boys. Well, that's all from me. I hope you enjoyed that little rundown of what we covered today for Dave. I've got a few more that I can put through as well, which would be different transformations as well. So some of them didn't go as deep in the physiology as Dave did. Some of them were very simple, like he set his calorie deficit. This is what we changed. These are the programs we did, and that was it. So some can be that easy. But I wanted to show you, like, sometimes we do have to go under the hood a little bit more, and deep dive in a few bits, you know, especially physiology wise. And I'm sure Greg's going to blow your minds on a few things because he's got some real, because Greg gets all, to be fair, most of the most difficult ones because he's good with the labs and the bloods. That's why I brought Greg in for the testing for Dave, right? Because like Greg looked at it, he's like, I understand biochemistry. He can analyze bloods way better than me. And then me and Greg train together. So we chat about biochemistry, we chat about physiology. If you pass this in the gym, you'd be like, these two are nerds, like just come out of school or something. We're just chatting about biochemistry as we're like doing reps. But we just nerd out on that type of stuff. But it's great when you start to understand that because you can unpack a lot of roadblocks that some people might go through, you know. Here he is. I think he's shown up. It's late. It's late for him as well. I know he's in Germany.
Here the whole time. I just can't talk because I didn't get my video on.
How do I do, mate?
Hey Ross, what questions do you have about how your process is going right now?
Yeah, hi, thanks. So I just got my nutrition plan at the beginning of the week, and it scares me, to be honest. I've got a call with Steve early next week to talk about it, but like the carbs have dropped. Because before I started this process, I was going to a new dietitian, and there hasn't been any dietitian that I've spoken to that says to drop the carbs like down to the 50 grams that I've got. And so that to me really freaked me out, I guess. And hearing the explanation from Gav and even previous talks from Greg, it makes a lot of sense. But I guess I've got to talk to Steve too. And that's why I asked the question, how long was he on the lower carbs for before they were raised? Because I don't know, I like my rice, I like my pasta, but as I found out the last 2 days, I actually like cauliflower rice. So I've never tried that before.
Man,
But
so it's a
that's,
values
yeah.
conversation, Ross. Like we all love bread. Gavin and I go to Italy or you know, we're in Europe, we're like, oh, we want to smash the sourdough, but you don't. It's like, what do you want more, right? Do you want instant gratification? Do you want long-term results? Can't have both. So
Yeah.
my suggestion is you commit to some time frame, follow what the coach says. And as he said, now Dave's out for dinner after 6 months and eating whatever the hell he wants. You gotta
Yeah,
earn it.
and
Earn.
that's a very doable time frame. The way I see it, yeah, like suck it up for 4 to 6 weeks, 8 weeks, whatever it is, and boom, you're back to normal.
Yeah. And push harder than you want to. Be willing to get uncomfortable. Yeah, because man, we get so stuck in this comfort zone and this desire this the absence of desire to go outside of the comfort zone, change won't happen unless you get uncomfortable. Doesn't have to be hard, but it's going to be uncomfortable because it's unfamiliar.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So don't,
Thompson. How do you like
sorry.
working with Jeff?
Amazing. I'm
He's
getting, as you heard, I'm
working
getting cleavage. So, you know, something's working.
so
Can I
hard.
add something to the discussion with Ross just now? Gavin knows right at the beginning, my feedback immediately when I saw the program was like, food's going to be my struggle. I love eating lots of varieties of stuff. I'm like, I'm a foodie. If you check my Instagram, it's all like, you know, eating out and fancy foods. And so Gavin would remember this probably. I said, look, I'll stick to it. It's, you know, very strict, very kind of like, for me, it's mundane, but as really you can spruce up the food, et cetera. But the benefit of it was I stuck to it for a good 2 months without cheating at all. And the benefit was that I could see, I could control the variables. I was actually keeping track of every single macro, weighing all my food all day, every day for like a whole 2 months. And I could actually see when we tweak things, how I responded to it. Right. if you don't control it, then you don't know, you're just leaving it up to like the whims of a chef who might add a bit more oil or a bit less, and so you don't know what's going on. So I think once I got past that, then I started having more social engagements and dates and stuff like that, and I started having more flexibility. I then had the confidence to say, okay, I can have a little bit of whatever on the weekend, and I know I can kind of recover from that very quickly. So it's just about controlling variables, and once you're comfortable with that, then you kind of buy yourself more flexibility in time.
So love that. One thing I want to add, how many of you guys are having a hard time with some conversation around time? Meaning I don't have the time to cook. I don't, like any of the, like, I don't have the time to make healthy foods. Does anyone have that? Okay. Often we conflate time and laziness. So we rationalize time when reality is laziness. I see this myself wanting to do this all the time. Gav, when we travel, doesn't matter where we are in the world, what is the same thing we do every single time we go? We create these 7-minute meals, maybe 10, and they're incredible. I mean, here in Germany, man, I find a market, buy the small number of things, doesn't cost me a huge amount of money, 7 to 10 minutes, and my meals are done. I can cook two or three meals at once, or I can cook one meal, but it always takes 7 to 10 minutes. So, like, you just need to learn how to do that. We have between 4 and 10 meals that take about 10 minutes or less to cook. And I can tell you what those are. My suggestion is you find things that hit your specs. Happy to share mine. I mean, we all have so many excuses around time. And I get sometimes time can be a challenge, but it's not as often as you think it is. It's usually just laziness.
Guess what my meal was tonight, Ben?
Rocket, chicken, and beets.
Literally. And I honestly didn't send him a photo either. So I mean, dieting, like, I'm coming to the last week of my diet now for 8 weeks. And I'm, majority of it's been like Rocket, arugula salad, 250 grams of beetroot, chicken, or I do some ground beef, apple cider vinegar over the lot, done. Like, it literally takes 5 minutes. Like, easy work.
Yeah, you
So,
need meat, right? Which is, if it's not frozen, if it's frozen, it takes longer. But if it's not frozen, you got to prepare ahead. You need a vegetable, which can be either a bottle, like a glass sauerkraut or beets or something like that. Maybe you need like a lettuce base and then some vinegar on top or some mustard, some salt and avocado. So I do some like berries or pomegranates or something. You're done, man. Look, 7 minutes. Like the longest thing is like browning the meat or grilling the steak. You
one
just
thing I'll
gotta.
say too is you'll start to enjoy that type of food as well. So the more your palate changes, you will start to enjoy it. It sounds like pretty boring, but once you start to get good with flavors, it's sensational. Then, obviously, Thompson was just saying, like, I've been weighing my food for 2 months, maybe 3 months, and so I'm very meticulous. But now he knows the foods and the amounts that's going to get him the right reaction. But it's not forever. So I know, like, when I started tracking food years ago, I could probably go to a restaurant now and be as within 100 or 200 calories of what I need on a plate because I can eyeball and go, that's enough. So if they put more on my plate than what I've asked for, then I'm now able to just leave the amount that I want if I need to, right? So if I'm dieting or something, or I'm doing something very specific for a photo shoot or wherever we're planning as a team, then I've got the ability to leave it. But if I'm like out with the family, I'm like, yeah, I'm going to probably have it, but once you start to go through that is practice and practice and practice, you're teaching yourself a skill on how to measure food on a plate. That's it. So actually, can I try this? I found this out on our team call yesterday. Who wants a real symbol? Now, nobody else drew on this whiteboard, by the way, because Chris Fudge drew on it yesterday and he drew something which wasn't appropriate. But I'm going to practice this whiteboard. I'm going to show you a very simple skill on how to eat out and how to put things on your plate. Ross, would this help you? If you're eating out, do you eat out at restaurants, Ross? Now and again? So that's a real weird plate. It looks more like an apple, but there we go. It's called the T plate. So you draw a line and you draw a line. So on this part of the plate, you're going to fill this with vegetables. So this is mine and Ben's rocket salad. is part of your plate is protein. Is part of your plate is carbohydrates. So that could be the beetroots, the sauerkrauts, the butternut squash, whatever that's going to be, right? And this is your fat. So you can add some a little bit of avocado, maybe some olive oil over the top. That's what your plate should look like. If you didn't train that day, then you could leave like this part out, and that could be more vegetables. Or you could leave this part out and you have more protein, drop the carbs. So it's whatever you're doing that day. So if you're not training that day, then you might not need as many carbohydrates. So you could add more protein or more fats or more vegetables, drop the carbs out. Does that make sense? So that's my general rule of thumb. If I don't know what's going to go on, I'll use that plate as a scenario on how I want to measure my food. And then I'm picking specific choices off the menu. So if I want to keep lower carbohydrate and I'm going to do a little bit more fat, I might have a steak with, let's say, a ribeye. So I know there's more fat in there. So then I'm not going to add like loads of avocado, loads of olive oil to that. If I'm having more carbohydrates and I have some sweet potato on the side, like on my vegetables, I'm probably going to go with a fillet steak. I might go some white fish. I might go with some chicken because it's lower fat. So I'll bring the fats down if I'm having more carbs. I'll bring the carbs down if I'm having more fats. But I use that plate. That's how I layer it up. Does that make sense? Should I do that, Andrew? Yes. Got the
I was
balloons
just
going.
going to say, follow it to a T.
Yep. Perfect. Good, man. And I worked out how to do the whiteboards as well. All good. And do you want to bring anybody else in?
Andrew, gee, how are you doing, man?
I'm doing well.
Yeah, I was going to say, when Ross spoke up earlier, like when I first started nutrition about 5.5 weeks ago, I think we did like maybe 3 weeks of training first before we started tracking everything. And just seeing the daily calories, I was like, oh man, this is a starvation diet. And like eating that amount of protein for me, it was similar to what we just looked at with Gavin's client. Like it really wasn't that bad. Like hunger has not been bad at all doing that high of protein. And I realized like I was never eating nearly enough protein, without tracking it. I assumed I was eating high protein, never was. But
I haven't seen your photos, but you look like a different man neck up. How you feeling? How your progress has been?
overall good. I was telling Chris last couple of weeks I had some get-togethers with some buddies from high school and college and kind of got off the diet a night or two there and paid for it. But outside of that, especially the first few weeks of nutrition, it was like, yeah, weight was coming off pretty quickly and energy is a lot better. I'm doing like 65 grams carbs right now, so pretty low on that. That's some days tricky, but I mean,
And
high
the
protein
thing that
helps
helps
so
me,
much.
Andrew, is sometimes you just have to realize making a change feels like you're running through neck deep mud. Eventually, you're like, "Oh, this mud is getting easier," and I'm eventually running on top of the mud, right? That's how
Yeah.
it feels sometimes. You're like, "All right, it's gonna be uncomfortable, and it's gonna feel slow and shitty, but once you get through it, it's worth it."
Yeah. Yeah. Doing the nutrition's been eye-opening, but all in a good way. Like it's a lot more manageable than I thought it would be and feels good.
It's just time, right? Just like get used to it. You can do anything if you get used to it.
Yeah.
Awesome. James, you good?
So I guess I'm actually on the opposite end. So Andrew and I are trying to put on weight. Well, I am. Andrew's not. But trying to just like eat more carbs and find the time to eat. So for me during the day,
I
it's
can help
like it's hard. So just like trying to find time throughout my work day to do it. And then like sometimes it's narrow windows and then sometimes it's like a big window. And so like I might have to eat like at 3 or 4 in the afternoon and then go home. And then I'm like, okay, can eat dinner now. And it's just like trying to figure that part out has been
Yeah, so there's a conversation that can go on in your mind. This may or may not be helpful, around the source of food you're eating. For example, if I'm trying to get something in quick, like I'll keep things like rice cake. If I want carbs, I'll keep rice cakes on. I'll keep dried fruit around, so I can ultimately have something that's relatively easy to have. It's not dirty. It's not going to require cleanup. It's like I can just kind of throw this back, between meetings or something. Also, Gav knows I keep beef jerky around, keep cans of tuna and salmon around, keep sardines around. They take no time at all. Is it the perfect meal? No. But sometimes you're like, I'm trying to grow, it can't be the perfect meal. So like cream of rice is a really good way to get really dense carbohydrates in. Add some fruit and some maple syrup or some fruit and some honey on that. You can have a couple hundred grams of carbs like that. So like look for these things that fit the circumstance you're trying to fill. So if you're like, oh, I got 10 minutes before my meeting starts, I can't go and like microwave a meal and eat sweet potatoes. Well, you could probably throw back some dried fruits, some beef jerky, and some rice cakes, right? So like specifically when you're growing, the macros don't have to be perfect. Because you're like, I'm just trying to grow. Like, if the more perfect you are, the less body fat you put on. But if you're like, if I eat a little extra here, a little extra there, high glycemic this, it's not a big deal when you're trying to grow. When you're trying to get leaner, it becomes more important. But yeah, in your case, man,
I've
like,
just kind of had this consistency of weight where it's like, just can't make the scale go that way. We're finally starting to get there, but it's definitely taken like an extra 500 calories or more.
yeah, I can't, man. Sometimes it's a lot. It's definitely a lot.
It's like a job.
Yeah, so one of the things I would add in, Andrew, if you're not already doing this, like people who are ectomorphic, like bone crushing heavy loads, like so heavy it feels like shit's gonna break. Like deadlifts, farmer carries, squats, even just like walkouts, 6 rep squats, super heavy weight. I think we talked about this, Andrew, where like your skeleton needs to become accustomed to holding heavier weights. And it takes a good amount of time, 4 to 6 months for your actual body to create more dense bone. But it's really important to creating stronger foundation.
Cool. Thanks.
I'll just acknowledge Gav. I mean, I was sitting here listening. Gav, I thought that was incredible, man. I thought it was useful. Your understanding is so clear. So thank you. Hopefully you guys all found value in that. Andrew, I know you're signed up for Costa Rica, man. Pumped to have you there. Thompson, I don't know if you're coming. Are you coming to Costa Rica?
I was the
Oh,
first one, mate.
you're my man. Can't miss it. Anyone else interested? We still have the $500 payment or discount available to you guys. Not for long, because I think we just opened to the public. So anyone interested, it's an incredible time. You're going to train harder than you ever hard train your life in a safe way, and just kind of explore new perimeters of the man that you are. And I think that's, as Gav said, the benefit of this coaching goes so far beyond the way you look. And so Dave was for the guy he's speaking of was a fraternity brother of mine from university. And he came to me maybe a month ago in a coffee shop in Toronto. He said, man, like he actually said something about Gav being a wizard, and also said that his relationship with his wife has never been better because she has finally been allowed to step into the feminine that she really is because he stepped into a masculine. So, by stepping into a masculine role, it allowed her to relax and like know that he's got it, and now she can be more feminine. So their intimate relationships are better, their parenting dynamic is better. And so he's just like, she can rely on me. And I was like, it's like I never thought that would happen from just like taking ownership and responsibility for my body. So that's, again, literally the greatest testimony we can get. So that's what from his mouth. Gents, once you go, Gav, you're the man. Appreciate you. Guys, keep working hard, crush it. We'll see you here next week. Probably be myself on the call next week. Maybe Greg, not sure.
Some boys. Have a great rest of your day. Speak soon.